Good morning, the House Civil Law, the House Workforce Development. I used to work for Civil Law, so excuse me. The House Workforce Development Finance and Policies. No. I'll come to order. Lee Baker?
He is not.
Representative Nelson, have you had a chance to look at the minutes?
Yes, I have.
Can you make a motion? Okay, all those in favor of adopting the minutes, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. First, on agenda, and the only item on the agenda is House File 100, and we have Representative Stevenson here, and so I will move that the House File 100 be referred to the Human Services Policy, and I believe we also have an author's amendment, the A47, and so I will move the A47 for adoption. Representative Stevenson, would you like to explain the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The A47 amendment is an author's amendment that gets the bill in the shape I'd like this committee to consider. It incorporates feedback and changes that we've been occurring as we've moved through the committee process. This is the seventh committee stop on this bill, which means we're expecting 14, so we're basically halfway there, which is exciting, but we've been getting feedback as we go along. This bill has a number of provisions related to some local government issues based on the feedback we got in the state and local government committee. Includes three different proposals that were offered by Republican members of the state and local government committee that I agreed to take on. It also includes a new system of licensing for local government after conversations with the League of Cities and the counties. A few other technical and sort of changes.
Okay. All those in favor of adopting the A7, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Representative Stevenson, to your bill as amended.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 100 is the bill to legalize adult-use cannabis in the state of Minnesota. I will be brief because it's a big bill. We'll leave time for discussion and testimony, but Minnesotans are ready for this change. Our current cannabis laws are doing more harm than good. Minnesotans deserve the freedom and respect to make their own decisions about cannabis. This bill creates a comprehensive new marketplace that will foster good jobs and good businesses here in Minnesota at all levels of the cannabis industry. Looking forward to the discussion, Mr. Chair, and I know that there's probably some people who would like to testify.
First testifier is Todd Harris, followed by John Hausleitner. Please be ready to testify. Mr. Harris, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Zhang, committee members, Representative Stevenson. My name is Todd Harris, and thank you for allowing me to speak today. I'm a native Minnesotan and co-founder and CEO of Plift, a hemp-derived beverage company. I'm here today to speak about expanding the purview of the cannabis industry training grants outlined in HF 100. Since our inception, Plift's mission has been to hire and nurture the next generation of master builders in BIPOC and underrepresented communities. By giving our employees ownership in our company, we will teach them that equity builds generational wealth. While we are just five employees, we are well on our way towards making significant impact. We've also started a hemp and CPG product incubator, empowering entrepreneurs to build their dreams and create meaningful jobs in their communities. CPG businesses need a little bit of everything: product formulators, designers, e-commerce, operations, sales, marketing, and other professional support services. As these upstart brands build momentum, they'll turn to their communities and offer meaningful full-time employment opportunities for others. We're actually on track to help another black-owned beverage brand launch in Minnesota this summer. I'm blessed and privileged to have achieved so many of my professional goals through hard work and the support of my family and friends. And I want to use that privilege and decades of professional experience to help entrepreneurs who look like me build a business and achieve their dreams. I would love to apply for a cannabis industry training grant, enabling me to enable entrepreneurs sooner. The current definition of industry at 149.8 is ambiguous, and I would strongly suggest it be expanded to include the hemp industry, as well as, after all, they both are the same plant. From my experience, I would like to encourage the following changes to the bill. Subsidizing the cost of fingerprinting for low-income individuals who want to work in the industry. Specifically allow employees to begin their employment while any background checks are in progress. And remove single license cap limit for low potency retailers. That's at 78.9 through 78.11. I want to be perfectly clear. PLIF is in full support of the legalization, decriminalization, and repair that needs to be done in the communities most impacted by the war on drugs, but not at the expense of the established and federally legal hemp industry and all the businesses that have invested in building their companies and are already employing Minnesotans. I'd like to close with the profound words of the late Senator Paul Wellstone. We all do better when we all do better. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and Representative Stevenson, thank you for the opportunity for my testimony today, and I'm happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you. Next testifier, John Hoglander from Trucker Association. All right, we'll go to the next person then. Rihanna Buckles, followed by Tom Evanston. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Zhang and members of the committee. My name is Rihanna Buckles, and I am the Legislative and Coalitions Director for Americans for Prosperity here in Minnesota. AFP believes in a dignified approach to public policy, advocating for bottom-up solutions that help every individual achieve their full potential. House File 100 is a great example of a transformational measure that will unleash a new market for jobs and economic growth in our state and open opportunities previously prohibited by law. Overall, we are supportive of this legislation. However, we do strongly advise against overly prescriptive regulations and rules that could impose unnecessary hurdles for those looking to enter the market, especially in its infancy. The bill should be positioned to legalize the market with appropriate safeguards and standards in place. And as we learn what works and what doesn't, then revisit the need for additional structures. I would also like to note that we do believe that there is significant room for transparency and accountability in this new market. To ensure market competitiveness and stability, we ask that the Office of Cannabis Management be required to submit an annual market analysis to determine whether it is fulfilling the prescribed requirements, in addition to holding public hearings to hear from consumers, market stakeholders, and potential new applicants to ensure a competitive market. We believe this element is vital to the success of legalizing cannabis and ensuring that this new government entity is acting in a fair and transparent manner. We would hate to see Minnesota follow the example of other states that have allowed a handful of large out-of-state companies to dominate their new markets. We sincerely thank Representative Stevenson for shepherding this legislation through and taking into consideration all of the stakeholders impacted by this bill, and we look forward to its passage. Thank you.
Thank you. Tom Evanston. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Zhang and members of the committee. My name is Thomas Evanstad, E-V-E-N-S-T-A-D, and I'm with Public Safety Minnesota, and I'm here today to testify in staunch support of this bill and this legislation. I am employed in the cannabis industry. I've had a very difficult time finding any job anywhere else because of background checks. And so I'm specifically asking this committee to take a very good hard look at the background checks. I was wrongfully convicted by the state. I'm not going to go down the rabbit hole on that in my testimony right here today, but I am available. I have written testimony on this bill. I've testified. This is my fifth hearing. I don't see Jesse Ventura anywhere, so I'm wondering why Tim Walz has him for his guest of honor. But anyway, background checks I'm concerned about. I can't pass a background check because of wrongful conviction. The media won't cover my wrongful conviction. And so that's very important to me, that in the course of this bill, background checks, if convictions are not, have no integrity, if they're based on lies, according to the University of Pennsylvania Law Review on my case. And then as far as this bill is also concerned, It's extremely important for every member of this committee and anyone who's going to vote on this bill to know that the prohibition of cannabis is racist. It is based in racism. I encourage everybody to read the book called The Emperor Wears No Clothes. I have included it in today's written testimony, the PDF. You can click on it, and you can learn about the truths about cannabis. And then finally, I would like to say that when I went to the dispensary yesterday, spoke with the employees, I'm concerned about them being sunsetted and being out of a job. So when Rise and Green Goods are sunsetted, which they should be because of the price gouging that's been happening with those two companies, I have a personal relationship with my bud tenders there, with the people that have been dispensing my medication for my PTSD that the state has done to me. So I'm requesting that there be some form of homogenous, so these people don't lose their jobs, is what I'm driving at. The people that have been at Rise and Green Goods that have spent years working should not be left out in the cold on this. And then my final concern today is I read somewhere that children are omitted from this bill, children, from being able to access cannabis medications, not to get high and, you know, so I would request that the bill's author be more responsive to me. I have reached out to Zach, Representative Zach Stevenson, once, the first time. Hey, I'm confused. Where's the hearing going to be? He gets back to me. I'm busy. You can look that up on your own, man. And so then when I emailed him about the children that are going to be left behind in this bill, as far as I'm aware of, dead air. So I'd like to know, are children going to be prohibited from receiving cannabis medications? Thank you very much, and have a blessed day. God bless.
Thank you. Next is Kyle Marinkovic, followed by Nate Ratner. Mr. Ratner, if you could also go sit up there so we can move quickly. Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Yes, hi. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Kyle Marinkovic. I'm the founder and CEO of Northern Diversified Solutions. We are a cannabis and hemp ingredients provider located in Burnsville, Minnesota. I also serve on the board of directors for the Minnesota Hemp Growers Cooperative and am a member of the Minnesota Is Ready Coalition. I founded NDS in 2019 after spending 14 years at Cargill, leading commercial activities in a variety of specialty ingredients and specialty supply chains across the globe. I had the privilege of working with amazing people from the farm gate to the consumer and gained extensive commercial and technical and management experience. I founded NDS to bring this experience to the cannabis industry, to build a high-performing, highly skilled team right here in Minnesota that serves customers from the upper Midwest to the East Coast, utilizing Minnesota-grown hemp and processed in the South Metro. We have invested over $1 million building these capabilities by employing individuals from agronomy and chemistry backgrounds to construction and skilled trades to business and food science. We are grateful for the state's continued support of the cannabis industry. As an example, we are fortunate to be able to participate in DEED's Angel Tax Credit Program, an Angel Loan Fund, which was foundational in our ability to hire, train, and retain a team of 5 full-time and 5 part-time employees to date. We expect to add 3 additional employees, including a STEM intern this summer through the Minnesota SciTech Program. These are all great-paying, highly skilled local jobs for the benefit of Minnesota's economy and its future. Thank you for the opportunity to be here and voice our support for HF 100.
Thank you. Next is Nate Ratner. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Zhang, members of the committee, Representative Stevenson. My name is Nathan Ratner. I am the vice president of The Great Rise. We are a Minnesota 501c3 focusing on cannabis equity policy research and public education. We believe that those who've been disproportionately harmed in prohibition should disproportionately gain in legalization, and we are here to testify in favor of House File 100. Minnesota is the third most prosperous state in the country and yet has the third worst racial wealth gap, worse than the state of Mississippi, which is fourth. 47 of the 50 poorest counties in the state are also in greater Minnesota. There is hurt across our great state. Estimates show that within the first 5 years, the Minnesota recreational cannabis economy will get to $1.2 billion in annual revenue and create 20,000 jobs across our state. This is likely the last major industry that will come online that normal people have any hope of working in. Otherwise, it will, you know, the growth industries are in bioengineering and artificial intelligence that most people can't even dream of being a part of. While equity licensing is essential, the truth is that employment will have a much greater magnitude on equity throughout our state. Salary data from other states show that bud tenders, I love the naming conventions, which are an entry-level job that require no prior certificate, earn $46,000 a year. The median income for African Americans in Minnesota is $47,000 a year, compared to $80,000 a year for white Minnesotans. All four corners of our state, from urban to rural, have an opportunity to benefit from this bill. CanTrain is truly innovative policy. No other state that we are aware of throughout our research has a program like this. Community-based organizations comprehensively demonstrated that they are best positioned to offer services to their communities. I've already had conversations with the president and CEO of American Indian OIC, who's very excited to include these programs within their service portfolio. This can go across the state from Moorhead all the way to Rochester and all four corners to ensure that everyone has an opportunity to participate, and again, especially those who have been disproportionately harmed. It also creates space for coalition building with other foundations and organizations to amplify the impact that the state's investment will create. Minnesota has the opportunity to once again lead the way and show the nation how we can craft the best, most inclusive policy for all of our communities. Again, thank you for the opportunity to speak on this bill.
Thank you. Next, we will move on to the remaining amendments being offered today. And first amendment is the A43 from Representative Harder. Representative Harder, if you could please explain your amendment.
Thank you, Chair Zhang. Representative Stevenson. So I offer the A43 amendment. This amendment is in the same spirit of House Rule 9.35, which bans former state legislators from registering as lobbyists within 1 year from the date that they leave office. The amendment would make statute consistent with the House rules that we adopted on the House floor last week, and so I request a yes vote.
Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the House rule, I support the House rule, and I would support making it a law as applied to all sectors, but I'm not sure it makes sense to carve out the specific sector. So, Representative Harder, if you bring a bill to do this across the board, I'll sign on number two on it. I support it, but I don't think we should just have one specific spot where you can't lobby. I think it should be across the board. So I ask members to vote no on the A43.
Further comments? Representative Harder?
Thank you, Representative Stevenson. I appreciate that, and perhaps we should work on that. Sometimes when representatives leave their position and they become lobbyists, for many people in Minnesota, it's the perception that they were there to entitle themselves rather than the people of Minnesota. Thank you.
All those in favor of adopting the A43, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Next is the A44 from Representative Nelson. Representative Nelson, if you could please explain your amendment, please.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Stevenson. This here, the amendment is what it's really doing is making the loans not forgivable. And I think the interest of it, or my understanding, it really probably starts back under the under 143.21, and it starts talking about the grants and the nonprofits and stuff that the grants will be allowed to. And then from there, if I'm understanding this correctly, those nonprofits that are receiving the grants can then make loans out to businesses. Maybe if I'm misunderstanding, if you could clarify that, is that the correct understanding, that the nonprofits can make grants out to businesses?
Representative Stevenson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I believe that's correct. I'm kind of looking over at Mr. Johnson to make sure he'll tell me if I'm wrong, but I think we got it right.
Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chair, members, Ben Johnson from House Research. That's an accurate description of the program.
Representative Nelson?
Okay. And I'm also understanding that these are supposed to be it's a revolving loan. And reading through it, I kind of assume that it renews annually. It's a little bit difficult to understand through here, but a business can apply for these up to 6 consecutive years, and then it may be renewed, it may not be renewed. They may choose to renew at a lower amount or not renew the loan at all. If the business is likely to continue on without the loan, or and so I'm just, what this amendment is doing is really just making them actually loans and not basically grants to a business. So I would urge your support on this.
Further comments? Okay, all those in favor of adopting the A44 say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Final amendment is from Representative Weems at A45. To your amendment, Representative Weems.
Thank you, Chair Jong and Representative Stevenson. I move an A45 amendment. We get to make the laws, and that's a privilege in legislation. We should not take personal benefit in it for a certain time period. This amendment basically excludes current legislators from having a cannabis license or being involved in a financial interest in a cannabis business until July 1st of 2027. And I think it's a good look for our body when we pass laws that that we take a time to step back and look rather than making financial interests.
Representative Stevenson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Weems, I appreciate the spirit of the amendment. Kind of similar to what I was saying to Representative Harder, I'm not sure why we should treat this sector any differently than any others. We passed last year in last biennium, for example, a very significant liquor bill that allowed for a lot of development in the craft beer space and craft distilling space and read the growler, all that stuff. And there was nothing in that bill that said that legislators couldn't go out and open a brewery the next year. I'm not aware of anyone who did, but there would have been nothing to stop someone from doing that. Likewise, if we were to pass, as I know a lot of people on this side of the table would like, and I'm a co-author of the bill to get rid of the tax on Social Security benefits, we don't say that, sorry, if you are over the age of 65 and were a legislator between 2023 and 2024, you don't get that tax cut until 2027. So I'm not sure why we should specifically target this bill for this type of approach. I agree with you wholeheartedly that we should be here to do the work, and I have no plans to enter the cannabis business anytime in the near future. I don't see that in my future, but I don't think that this is a path we should go down specifically, and particularly with specific regard to one industry as opposed to the literally hundreds of laws we pass every year that have pretty profound impacts
on Minnesota's economy. So I'd ask for a no vote. But I appreciate it.
Further discussion, Representative Williams.
Yeah, Chair Zhang, Representative Stevenson. I appreciate your willingness to work on something in the future for all bills we pass. I think there needs to be an accountability in ensuring that not just the optics of what we do as legislators, but the real impact that we don't do this for personal gain. We do this to serve the citizens of Minnesota. However, today we are voting on your bill, and I recommend a yes vote on this. I move the 845 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Weems. All those in favor of adopting the A5, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Seeing no further amendments, we're open up for questions and comments. And first member is Vice Chair Brand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Chair Stevenson, and welcome to the Workforce Committee. Part of the bill deals with a CAN-TRAIN program. Could you or our wonderful research staff give us a little bit more information about that CAN-TRAIN program?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Brand. You know, I think you heard some testimony. Sorry, I thought you were over there. I think you heard some testimony as to the grant programs and the uniqueness of what we're trying to do here. You know, the priority in this bill is to foster a lot of small businesses in Minnesota that can take advantage of this industry, with particular emphasis on the people and communities that have been harmed in prohibition over the last few years. I think you heard Mr. Ratner's testimony to that effect. And this is an important piece of the puzzle in making sure that people who want to enter the space have the tools and knowledge necessary to successfully open a business, start a business, particularly a business that will be in a, you know, regulated environment here in the state of Minnesota. And you know, I believe that federal legalization is coming. It's a matter of, you know, when, not if, and when that happens, that will also probably be a regulated space. And so there is a lot of knowledge and information that needs to come along with trying to be successful in this. And I think you have the CAN train, you have the CAN grow, a number of other grant programs that are important to help people have the tools to be necessary to be able to participate in this industry.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative. My question is from the perspective of the employer and safety, in the sense of how are we going to have measurements for 24-hour care settings? You're a nursing home, you're an assisted living, you're a hospital, you're a surgery center. They're all full of employees that have to provide care. So as an employer, if somebody's perceived to be intoxicated, there's tests for that. And so I'm not sure how employers are going to measure this. I don't see that it's going to be prohibited for any of these employees to be using in it's legal. So I'm just trying to understand how this is going to work in society for industries like caregiving, and how we're going to measure some of these things equitably and keep people safe. Because if the care plan's not followed and you have a fall with a fracture, somebody's going to be responsible. So there's this element here that of unknown. And I just would like to hear your thoughts on that, please.
Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, you know, to begin with, I want to just clarify that there's nothing in the bill that would prohibit an employer, particularly in a sensitive setting like the ones you're discussing, from, you know, prohibiting people from being intoxicated on the job. In fact, I that is the that's what's going to happen. And, of course, that's what happens today, right? You can't be drunk. You can't. And there are plenty of legal substances that will intoxicate you today. That you can't consume while you're working. It's also important to know that we can't change federal law, and there's a lot of federally licensed professions that prohibit cannabis, any amount of cannabis consumption. Even if we make it legal, it's still going to be unlawful on a federal level to engage in that substance while having a specific federally issued license. So, you know, airline pilots and truck drivers and others are unchanged by that piece of it. The other thing that I do want to clarify, and I think this is probably the most important thing, is that there is this perception out there, because of the breathalyzer test for alcohol, that we can test and find out if someone is intoxicated. And we can with regard to alcohol, but alcohol is the outlier. It is not the norm. As I mentioned, there are a lot of substances, legal substances, that you can take that will intoxicate you, that will make you impaired, and you should not, you know, be giving people care or operating heavy machinery or doing it driving, right? I mean, and it could be as simple as Benadryl, or it could be a prescription drug, or it could be some other substance. Alcohol is really the only one where we have that technology of a breathalyzer, where we can see how much you have in your system and make a judgment of whether you're intoxicated. For everything else, we have to do other means of testing to see if you're impaired or intoxicated, behavioral-based things. And it works. And I can tell you that as a prosecutor, it works. We're able to get driving under the influence convictions for people who are driving with prescription drugs or other things in their system that they should not have been driving with. That happens. So we can do that. The other thing that this bill does is it invests in an oral fluid pilot project, because the technology is getting better on this with regard to cannabis, and I'm hopeful that in the not-distant future we'll have an analogous testing device like a breathalyzer, and we invest in that. In fact, we invest in that right away, so that pilot project would go online if this bill passes this summer, where the legal cannabis market probably will be, you know, delayed beyond that. It's something we take seriously. I had a conversation the other day about further developing some of those behavioral-based intoxication tests, and I'm interested in pursuing that in the bill too. So, in other words, you know, this is a problem that we can solve, that we have the tools to solve. The bill creates a good framework for it. It is important that we have caregivers and others who are not intoxicated. But I am very confident that the bill handles that that problem appropriately.
Representative Zalesnikar.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson. I appreciate your response. I just want to make sure we have a conversation on that, because I think, you know, I realize the test isn't there for TH, for this with the cannabis, but it's important for us to just understand what we're doing and how the implications are going to be, because actually implementing things that, you know, in the settings for 24-hour operations become challenging, because it's legalized, and so, you know, it's easy to determine alcohol in the settings I've worked usually, but something like this is difficult to. And you'd have to have trained people. You know, the nursing homes and assisted livings in these places are likely not going to have people trained like police officers would be and sheriffs to determine these types of things. But I understand what you're saying. I understand that there's other drugs, too, in the same thing. I just wanted to just have the discussion. So it's complicated, but I think there's lots of questions we have to just have some answers to. Thanks.
Representative Samantha Sensenmura.
Thank you. Thanks, new chair. Thank you, Representative Stevenson. I wanted to just dig into this a little bit more just to make sure that I'm understanding. So if I'm understanding you as an employer, for example, you know, of a 24-hour care facility, you could choose to do drug tests of your employees and make that a condition for employment. Is that correct?
Representative Stevenson?
Chair Zhang, I'm going to turn to Mr. Johnson, because we have specific language about when you can do drug testing under the bill, which to me is different than saying you can't be intoxicated while doing your job. But for the specific question as to drug testing, I'll go to Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chair, members, again, Ben Johnson from House Research. In Article 6, there are several provisions that relate to the testing of employees. The default for that testing is that cannabis testing is only done when there are signs of intoxication, an accident, things along of that nature. However, there are multiple exceptions to that default position. If you look at page 199 of the current engrossment, you'll see that there are a list of exceptions that includes seven specific things and a few subsections under that. In essence, what this list says is that for the purposes of people in these particular employment positions, cannabis testing can be just like any other drug testing, which would permit random drug testing for these positions. It includes things like peace officers, firefighters, but it also includes people who have face-to-face care with children, with vulnerable adults, with patients who receive health care services from a provider, and a few other categories. Again, that's on page 199 of the bill. Mr. Chair, that's the answer.
Thank you for that clarification. Yeah, so I guess as I'm understanding it, you know, I would think that the kind of industry that Representative Zalesnikar is talking about would be covered under that, and so it is the employer would be able to do random drug testing. I mean, I think to your point, Representative Stevenson, it is different as has somebody ingested cannabis in the last month or so, different than did they do it right before coming to work, and we don't have a test that says whether or not you've drank alcohol in the last month, and I don't think that we make that a prerequisite for working. So I'm not saying that we should do that. I'm just wanted to point out that I do believe that employers still would have that under this law, and I think it's great to hear that there's technology that might allow us to kind of pinpoint more about when people have ingested, because I think that that's the really key piece, and I personally do not believe that somebody who has you know, ingested cannabis in the last month might not be able to work in some of these positions. Thank you.
Further discussion. Representative Zalesnikar.
Thank you for your comment. And I'm just looking at this, and I see that the positions are listed. I think the issue would be, even if you were going to test, there isn't a test that tells you if it's current or in the last 30 days or 10 days. That's really my point. So I don't see employers being in a position where testing would be something that would be give you accurate data, because to your point, what they do outside of work, if they're not impaired, it could be in their system for 30 days, from what I understand. So that's really what I'm speaking to, is the complications of that part. It doesn't seem to be relevant, the testing, because there isn't a test to give you accurate data to really be looking out for the employee's best rights, which I would want to do too as the employer. So to my point, that's really what it is. Thanks.
Other comments? Representative Nelson.
Thank you. And probably going back a little bit to the loans area of that, is the repayment of the loans and the interest rate is covered in there because it can't be over prime rate, I believe. But the repayment schedule and things like that, is that up to the nonprofit how they choose to do so? Or, you know, if you could kind of walk through that and explain that a little bit, please.
Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, yeah, I think that there is a fair amount of flexibility in that particular section. I think that you earlier kind of articulated in paragraph F of subdivision 4 and the loans to businesses under the startup financing grants, that paragraph F kind of establishes that they can do it on an annual basis up to 6 years, a few other guardrails, but there is designed to be some flexibility, I think, in this section of law.
Representative Nelson?
Thank you for that. And probably another question somewhat similar along these lines. Was the medical cannabis program, were there any, when that was started, I don't remember what year it was, but when that was started, were there any similar loans like that available to the medical cannabis?
Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, you know, I wasn't here in 2014 when the medical cannabis law went into effect, so I don't know that I know the answer to that. I don't know if someone on our staff does.
Mr. Johnson?
I'm hearing no from a reliable source to my right. I'm hearing the answer.
No financing. You had to be rich to get it. I was there.
Any further discussion? Representative Nelson.
Thank you. And I think, is this the seventh committee stop? I think it is. It's about halfway through. And I see that there's not a fiscal note on this. So, you know, there's some money that is being spent, but kind of wondering if you have a timeline of when there may be a fiscal note available and kind of, I know the bill is kind of changing a little bit and you've been working on some of the changes that we've requested, and I appreciate that, but I'm just kind of curious if you have an idea when there may be a fiscal note available.
Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I'm blanking on what the date is. I'm looking over it. Is it March 3rd? Or I can't remember the date that the fiscal note is due. I will say this, that the bill also includes tax provisions and licensing fees. And the bill last year, House File 600, when you compare the fiscal note and the revenue estimate, was a net positive to the general fund. It brought in more money than it spent. And that's my expectation for this bill as well, although not by any significant, you know, as I think I've said in other places, this is not a bill we're going to use to finance the operations of state government. You know, we're going to make sure that we cover the cost of the bill in a responsible way, but we're not, no one should be looking at the cannabis bill as a major source of revenue to do other things outside of what's accomplished in the bill.
Representative Nelson.
And I thank you for your comment on that, because I think, you know, as we've seen other states, you know, specifically Washington, Colorado, you know, over time they've seen their revenues drop, and that very well could be because other states have come along and legalized it. Maybe there isn't the maybe the usage has dropped. I don't know what, you know, there's probably several things that are you know, due to that, and so I think it's something that it's not wise to fund other areas of the state based upon, you know, creating revenue here. I think that would go further some of the testimony we've heard today of the disparities that have been in the illegal cannabis, but I think that could definitely be a problem if we did that. So, but thank you for that.
Closing remarks, Representative Stevenson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the good discussion. As has been indicated, I'm happy to continue talking with anyone about this bill and any problems. We are continually updating and making changes to the bill in response to the feedback that we're getting. I did want to briefly just mention, as it was brought up in testimony, the bill does not make any changes at all to the rules around access to medical cannabis for children. So the existing law is unchanged by this bill as to that. Just wanted to answer that question. Other than that, Mr. Chair, I appreciate your time, your committee time, and the good discussion, and ask for a yes vote on the bill.
I will renew my motion that House File 100, as amended, be re-referred to the Human Services Policy Committee. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails, and the bill is on its way. That being said, there is nothing else on the agenda, so the committee is adjourned.